Is it chilly in here this morning?
No.
It's not? Good. See, your breath is an average of 98.6 degrees. So by singing, you save on energy. So our president should tell everyone to go to worship on Sunday. That way we can save on energy cost. I want to welcome Brother Ken and Kevin is there with him today. Jane, Lanny, and Cheryl, Tiffany, Joe, Golden Living. We got a good internet connection this morning. I hope that it's working. And we have a couple classes starting this week. If you'd like to come to them, the small home group Bible studies. We have a class at the Brissers, Stan and Julie, at their newer home. And it's starts at 6 p.m. on Tuesday. If you would like to go to that class and you need a ride, let me know and I'll give you a ride. We're covering generational curses. It's a very profitable class. If you've ever had a struggle and you're trying to get rid of it, then it will help you go in and debug it. Then starting on Friday morning at 9 this week, and Lisa will email you out the exact days. They're not always every single week, but they're about 6 and 7 lessons apiece, so they don't go on forever. We're having a class at Bob Nedai's place. Bob, raise your hand. That's follow the hand to that head. That head, that face right there. Remember that face. The study's there at him and his wife Dixie's home. It's on creation evidence, and which brings me up to this point. She's still in the hospital this morning, right? His wife Dixie is up at Holy Spirit, room 377. Keep her in your prayers. They still don't know what it was. They thought it might have been a heart attack or something, but they ruled that part out, didn't they? Sort of. Okay. Well, but keep her in the prayer, and we'll let you know if for some reason that study is postponed, but I don't think it will be. She looked pretty healthy last night, but they got to figure out what's going on. Gene Parsons is in osteopathic hospital. He went there last night. Keep him in your prayers. Also, Brother Francis Amera. Francis, raise your hand for those who don't know who you are. His mother died this week, and his mother is in Sierra Leone. He hasn't seen his mom for almost 19 years. Is that about right, Francis? 19 years he hasn't seen her. Francis is a refugee. He fled for his life. The things that went on in Africa, you know, Francis ended up digging with his hands in diamond mines, was nearly crushed to death. He ended up being able to come to America. He became a Christian. He was baptized into Christ right here in this baptismal. And he won't be able to go back to his mother's funeral. It's just almost an impossibility for him to do that. And please send him some cards this week. Let him know you appreciate him. And the burden of the entire funeral is upon his shoulders. And it will cost him $600 for his mom's burial. And if you want to include a memorial check in that, he'll be more than happy to help receive that. And then they're going to try to video record the actual service that's going on in Africa. And when Francis receives a copy of that, we might have a private memorial for Francis and anyone else who would like to come. And because that's what we would do normally if his mom was here. But you can help carry that burden by coming and sharing in that service with Francis. And if you've always wanted to go to an African service for a funeral service, they're not like our service. It would be something very memorable for you as well. And so with that in mind, we're going to continue our series of lessons. We're in lesson 9, and I think I'm going to even extend it some to have some more proactive lessons on it, because we need to have a lot of things that we can do. We're the salt, and we're the light, and we have to be doing something in this. I'm still priming the pump, though, because there are still people who think that this nation is going strong they still think there's nothing wrong with the nation, or there's just a few things wrong with the nation. We're on death row, okay, as a nation. And I don't mean to make your day bad, but sometimes you got to step on some toes before you start seeking comfort. And we got to turn our hearts to Christ. And so this morning's lesson in the series, The Coping Christian in One Nation Under Satan, is this. When Satan takes over a nation, this is how he's done it. Sir John Bagot Glubb, he's born in 1897, died in 1987. He was highly honored. I think his picture should be up there behind me. The screen isn't on, so I just had to check. He's a historian. He wrote about the collapse of empires in the past. In his 1978 book, The Fate of Empires and the Search for Survival, he described a common pattern of the history of all fallen empires. He observed that nations experience the common life cycle pattern from infancy to death, and they are as follows. The seven stages of a nation's life cycle. He says, number one, there is an age of outburst, an age of conquest, an age of commerce, an age of affluence, an age of intellect, an age of decadence, and an age of decline and collapse. Now, of course, over time, the belief system of a nation slowly changes. We don't notice it. Every generation that comes up, they don't have all the built-in history. It would be really cool if you could take all the history that somebody who's 80 years old, that they know, and just automatically download it into a head. But that's not how it goes there. It can only go there when people revere the elderly, and then that information is passed down and matriculated into the actual equation. The military, religious, economic, and the political events affect the culture constantly and creates new normals of society. Without recognizing the gradual transformation, the populace repeatedly follows a downward slide, which eventually ends up in chaos. In 1958, four television stations in New York refused to run the television commercial that mentioned the word hemorrhoids. You couldn't mention that. Now, if that was the limitation we had today, we'd have a great society. But that's how much we've changed in our society over time. And whenever there's change, there's also results of those actions. A detailed examination of these seven stages will guide us in what our future likely holds in the United States of America. I'm going to go ahead and first set up those seven stages in the nation of Israel. And then I'm going to take the United States and take them as well. Remember, Glubb found that every single empire that rose and fell went through these seven stages. The age of outburst. With Israel, the people, you know, in the age of outburst, the people have a common vision which is bigger than them. It leads them to make great sacrifices. More often than not, the core thrust of this stage is anchored in religious conviction. For the people of Israel, during this stage, they shared a common vision of taking that promised land given to them by God based on the promises given to Abraham, Genesis chapter 12 and following. Now, with his help, they departed from Egypt in search of this new life and new land, Exodus chapter 14. That was their age of outburst. Then they had an age of conquest. That's when a nation will conquer lands with which they reside. The book of Joshua illustrated this stage for the nation of Israel. With God's help, the Israelites won battle after battle and wiped out the enemy, dispossessing them from the land, Joshua chapter 1, verse 11. Then there's the age of commerce. The nation opens up trade with the other surrounding nations. They become viable. They have a viable currency, viable industry, production. Israel experienced great times of commerce with their neighboring countries earlier on. The wars of David secured peace, and his son Solomon opened up trade like nobody's business. at the height of Solomon's empire, well, in fact, if you take the 40 years that Solomon, if you take all the time that he was on that throne, he averaged $800 million income per year over that period. This guy was a bajillionaire. And that's because wherever there's free trade, there is great profits to be made, which leads us up to the age of affluence. This resulted in massive works of architecture, including the temple and the palace of King Solomon. He built, archaeology reveals that they also built great horse stables and other impressive structures, some of which remain today. This was all done during that time of the age of affluence. On the 500th anniversary of the crossing of Israel from the Red Sea, actually it's the Sea of Aqaba, there was actually a pillar erected on one side and on the other where the natural 300-foot rise in the waters come from. I mean, these guys were, they were building anything and everything. And another common feature of that, the wealth begins trickling into the hands of a few. That's usually towards the end of that age of affluence. Then there's the age of intellect. All prosperity causes a shift to seek, quote, new and improved. You see it in our commercials all the time. New and improved. They call what they had perfect for the solution. And then they say, we've new and improved perfect. That makes it imperfect at that point. And so the people try to do that. And that brings about a harsh attitude towards the tested values of the past. You have to attack that which is true and tested in order to have new and improved. And so many of the kings which followed the reign of Solomon began to become wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight, Isaiah 5, verse 21. They dismissed the time-tested policies and replaced them with impulsive follies. Then there was an age of decadence. In their self-proclaimed wisdom, the intellects redefined morality. If I'm going to change new and improve, well, there's a morality that we have that must also come with it. People tend to do what's right in their own eyes, Judges 21, verse 25, as they build upon false logic. As Paul said, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof, 1 Timothy 3, verse 7. And 2 Timothy 3, verse 7. When Israel reached this stage of her history during the days of Manasseh, immorality was at an all-time high. 2 Chronicles 33:1 through 9. Go back and read it. At the very spot where Solomon dedicated the temple, this high and holy day, high and holy event, high and holy location, by the time you reach the time of Manasseh, male prostitutes were pimping themselves out in that very same building. That's how far it slid from what the intention was. And also during that time, God condemned the nation to face destruction for which they have passed the point of no return. You can reach the point of no return. You jump off a cliff, you're not dead till you hit. But let me tell you, you've already reached the past of the point of no return once you jump off the cliff. It is inevitable. You might grab some branches on the way down. You're going to get hurt a bit on the way down, but it's that last step that's going to kill you, which leads to the age of decline and collapse. That's when the nation reaches the tipping point. The downfall of the culture will be either from within, which it usually is, or without, or a combination of the two. In Israel's case, they were deteriorated morally and economically from within. Unable to unite among the narcissistic chaos, they were destroyed from without by Babylon, but they were already dead from within in their soul. It would behoove us to pay attention to what happened to them. 2 Chronicles 36:10 and following, they were destroyed. Glubb confirmed that all the nations he studied exhibited this pattern of death. And we know that many of the societies from the Bible experience the same. And so it says in Hebrews 8 verse 5, behold the pattern. Let us behold the pattern and see where we're at in the dead man walking phase. It behooves us to put our country on the backdrop of this pattern and see if we followed it and to see where we're at. And then from there, in the lessons to come, we're going to see what we can do about it. Even if we're on death row, we can make appeals by studying Josiah and other Reformationists that can make a difference in the long run. And it will definitely make a difference in our own lives. And so, with this, the United States of America on the backdrop of this pattern. We had an age of outburst, which we covered. Our nation was founded primarily on the pursuit of freedom, and above all, First Amendment in the Bill of Rights, the right of religious freedom, because that's the one that sets the tone for everything. We looked at the Declaration of Independence we have out there on display during this series. Five times God is mentioned, and we're told that our rights come from a creator, and we as created beings. That's where we get our rights from. Not from a king, not from a president, not from any politician. Our rights come from God. That's what made this nation strong. 56 founding fathers all agreed we had a creator and that our rights came from the creator. And they all signed a document and they said, we're going to pursue this. But that's really the type of people who came to this country. During the age of outburst, you know, William Bradford, the leader of a movement called the Pilgrims, wrote about this religious persecution prior to his departure for America. I'm going to read to you the exact quote which he wrote concerning this. But after these things, they could not long continue in any peaceable condition, but were hunted and persecuted on every side, so as their former afflictions were but as flea bitings in comparison of these which now came upon them. For some were taken and clapped up in prison. Others had their houses beset and watched night and day and hardly escaped their hands. And most were fain to flee and leave their houses and habitations and means of their livelihood. These pilgrims were persecuted because they wanted an open Bible. They wanted to read what God wanted in their lives. And the government said, no, we're going to tell you. We're the ones dictating the rights. That's what brought them here. It wasn't so they become a Boston Red Sox fan. It was so that they could have religious freedom that they came here. They were on the cusp of the age of outburst in the pursuit of freedom, of worship of God, of the Bible. And motivated hurting souls to make perilous journeys to this dangerous new world where more than half of them would be dead within a year. Many others came from Europe over the next couple centuries in search of that same freedom. They sought to use the Bible as the primary text of education, and the churches were built throughout the land. The freedom of religion to worship God of the Bible can be seen throughout this early nation as we covered. The founding fathers were all devout in their faith toward God and His Son, Jesus Christ. The Declaration of Independence, I mentioned, talks about God five times. The First Amendment to the Constitution guarantees the number one, the first, is freedom of religion. The Northwest Ordinance required every state seeking to enter into this union to have to recognize this, require Christianity taught in every school. 197 of the first 200 colleges founded by churches. Students seeking a law degree were required to have a theological degree, because how could you understand the laws of man if you don't understand the laws of God, which the laws of man are based upon? They were a Christian nation founded upon Christian convictions. During this age of outburst, they were united. And then you had the age of conquest. Land was fought for, purchased from possessors, and negotiated in detailed plans. As the colonies and states were added to the Union, Christianity spread throughout. The laws were given were based on the Bible. Go back and read the early meetings of Congress. In one case, they had they were trying to find a punishment for a crime, and they said 500 lashings. And one of the congressmen had an open Bible, and they said, wait a second, you can't give over 39, because if you do, that's equivalent to a death penalty. Congress stopped immediately. They met for a couple hours, and they came out and they said, if the Bible says it, that's what we're doing, and they changed the law. Those are countless in our early history. And you had this Christianity spreading throughout everyone. The people were expected to uphold a morality of the Bible. Remember, it says certain unalienable rights. They said, we don't have a right to go out and commit immorality. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the rights that bring about goodness and wholesomeness of a nation. And so, in this age of conquest, you had men like George Washington, Patrick Henry, John Adams, Alexander Hamilton, Samuel Adams. They all influenced the nation to pursue these rights in righteousness. Their words and actions are closely orchestrated with the God of the Bible, and this was all done during our age of conquest. Then there was the age of commerce. The shackles of imperialism broken through the Revolutionary War, commerce among this young nation thrived. We became a country of mass production, natural resources, inventory, and invention. Economic freedom combined with biblical work ethic led us to be a nation like no other on the planet. Economic freedom combined with that work ethic, we became the major exporter throughout the entire world in just a few short decades. Farming was still the number one industry, and personal land ownership was higher than anywhere else in the world. This age of commerce was something that the world had never seen to this level. A special note. There was a man named Alexis de Tocqueville from France. He came to our country, and for 5 years he walked and wanted to know, how can we be a country of just less than 50 years and be the leader in everything? For 5 years he studied this. And here's what he wrote. Quote, he went back to his land of France and he said, this is what we have to do if we're going to be successful. He said, America is great because she is good. If America ceases to be good, America will cease to become will cease to be great. He saw the morality that we had in our country, that we lived on a standard of love your neighbor as yourself instead of doing whatever you want to do. And as a result of the mutual respect we had in the country, of the deep religious conviction that were in the hearts of men and evil, the predominance of them, that this is how we became great. He went on to say, he warned, quote, when the taste for physical gratifications among them has grown more rapidly than their education, the time will come when men are carried away and lose all self-restraint. It is not necessary to do violence to such a people in order to strip them of the rights they enjoy. They themselves willingly loosen their hold. They neglect the chief business, which is to remain their own masters. Like a prophet, he warned us. He said that if we ever start going down a path where we're not going, where we're going to just self-gratify ourselves, we're going to do what's right in our own eyes, we will be destroyed from within.
Yes, sir.
And that brings us to the age of affluence. Through America, although America began as a shining light among the nations of the world, she still had faults to contend with. Southern states expanded slavery largely due to cheap labor to work for the land and prospering plantation owners. And then you had the Civil War that was meant to correct that. With the emergence of great commerce came an expansion of the upper and lower classes. Industrialists like J.P. Morgan in banking, Rockefeller in the oil industry, Carnegie over in Pittsburgh with the steel, Ford with the automobile. Great things were brought forth. Vanderbilt excelled in shipping and rail. They became rich beyond human imagination. At the same time, the majority of America started sliding in. The middle class was eroded, because you had monopolies being brought forth. This is further exacerbated by the Great Depression. It was also the time when great structures like the Chrysler Building and the Empire State Building was built. And if you look at all these huge, large buildings built by large investments of rich men who emerged in those monopolies, you'll see the patterns very similar to Solomon and all these other nations during the same age of affluence. There was a great display of that. And so we have the age of intellect Around the same time, intellectual approach taken by our nation, that began to change. Control of the public schools was taken away from the churches and given to the states in 1895. You had men like John Dewey who influenced the schools to learn humanism, saying we came from the snot of a monkey instead of from a creator. You know, if you take away the creator, you have to ignore what the Declaration of Independence said. You have to. Thomas Jefferson didn't say we were formed by monkey snot with certain unalienable rights. We were formed by a creator. But take away the creator, the whole declaration falls. So men like John Dewey promoted that. Colleges began to question authority and tradition. Prayer and the Bible taken out of public schools through the same efforts. Every year, the national trend was higher divorce rates, higher unwed pregnancy rates, higher abortion rates, higher crime rates, lower test scores in areas that mattered like math and science. Because this led to higher poverty, we decided we'd have a war on poverty, which, very frankly, we've lost. It's been a terrible investment. It was time to, it seems that the country had more problems with this new way of thinking in place of the original belief structure of an early nation that had become great. An early characteristics like hard work, honesty, strong families, and morality. The age of intellect left us further from God and with more consequences. Then you have the age of decadence. Glubb wrote, you can tell a lot about a nation by the heroes that they have. If that's true, we're in serious trouble. 50 years ago in our country, men like George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Patrick Henry, Christopher Columbus, Thomas Jefferson, Betsy Ross, and Daniel Boone, they were the heroes. Today, our people honor unprincipled Hollywood actors, immoral athletes, filthy mouth rap singers, dishonest politicians. They're our heroes. Snooki's my hero, they say. The Kardashians are my hero. The angels in heaven gag. Those aren't heroes. They're losers. And so, more than that, we've become a nation of materialists, immoral sexual deviants, and narcissistic radicals hell-bent on walking over the top of others for our own appetites. We have a nation of fools warring against Christian traditions like marriage, the Bible, loving our neighbor, and yes, even Christians themselves. We do not have unborn human, we do not value unborn human life. We don't value the elderly as precious from God, but they're inconveniences that need to be disposed of. Turn our heads as millions of babies are slaughtered during the same time and go trying to save harp seals and snail darters. Now babies are being sold for body parts. We take $500 billion out of the medical funds used to take care of the elderly, $50 billion a year. And we wonder why the elderly are dying at higher rates now in the hospital. No longer is marriage of one man, one woman, but just of whatever you want to redefine it as. Now the same reprobates are attempting to lower the age of consent for children to as low as 8 years old. Go look it up. It's a group called NAMBLA, 35,000 members strong. They're now demanding the age of consent for your children to be considered adults to make decisions with them to be 8 years old. Eight is too late is their slogan. We in the United States are in this age of decadence. We're going downhill from here. As God said of that dying nation of Nineveh in Jonah 4 verse 11, we do not know our right hand from our left. And then there's the age of decline and collapse. This is the stage I believe we're in. As mentioned before, morality will continue to fall and narcissism will take over. Our nation is on death row. And this is because there is no national glue to hold our country together anymore. What are we united on? You put 500 narcissists in a room to order a pizza, that pizza ain't getting ordered. You put 500 Christians in a room, They may all get cheese pizza, but they will make a decision together because they love their neighbor and narcissists love themselves. And that's where we're going next week. Exactly in this stage, where are we at? Exactly what Alexis de Tocqueville had predicted is coming true, but God predicted it millennia before de Tocqueville was a thought. Just like the historians have taught us, just as the Bible has taught us and has confirmed to us over 1,000 years, we are in the age of decline and collapse. How long until our nation ends? Only God knows for sure, but as Daniel 5 says, the handwriting is on the wall. History is clear. We cannot continue on this path and expect to survive as a nation. The natural consequences are there. Whatsoever a nation soweth, that shall she also reap. How can you plant a bunch of nasty seeds and not expect nasty consequences to come up? Here's what I want you to do for 1 week. Do it 1 week. Practice this for 1 week. I know there's some of you that are optimists out there. You might be a flaming encourager in your giftedness. When you see someone beaten half dead and laid alongside the road, you say, at least they're half alive, but that's not what we're trying to do here. We need to see the truth because we are never going to be proactive in making a difference if we don't see what the problem is. If you have children, if you have grandchildren, you need to be leading this. Jesus said concerning the destruction of Jerusalem, he said in Matthew 24, 32 through 35, now learn the parable of the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. Truly I say unto you, this generation shall not pass away till all these things be fulfilled. Jesus said to the apostles, these are signs that this city's fallen down. The apostles said, look at this amazing building. Isn't this cool, Jesus? We're in the metropolitan of all of Israel. Man, this is cool. And Jesus said, not one stone shall stand upon another which shall not be cast down. This place is going down. This nation going down. And they say, what shall be the times of this? And Jesus gave them the signals. He told them what to look for. And we have the same things to look at. They're the same pattern. God doesn't have 10 different cookie cutters. He has one cookie cutter. He designed it. He knows what the natural consequences are. If you see one, behold the pattern. And so the worst thing we can do is to turn a blind eye to the truth. In doing that, we leave ourselves open for further consequences, and we will fail to be a people of warning, something that we need to be. 1 Peter 5, verse 8 says, be of a sober spirit. Be on alert. Your adversary walks about like the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. In this next lesson, we're going to cover in detail. Here's what I want you to do. Look in the mirror every day. And I don't care how great the birds are chirping. I don't care if your favorite song came on the radio alarm clock. Does anyone have those anymore? Okay. Yep. All right, that dates you. Anyway, it doesn't matter if your grape nuts tasted great, whatever it is. Look in the mirror and say to yourself, this nation's on death row. This nation's on death row. We're done as a nation. If you can't say that through all this stuff that we're covering and what we're going to cover next week, then you're never going to really be effective in trying to help correct the problem. You see, the first step in any program is to admit that you have a problem. If you don't admit that you have a problem, you're not going to go looking for the solution. And I want you extra, extra, extra thirsty when we cover the solutions as to what we can do. You might not be able to stop it, but you can delay it. And you could protect yourself and your family and minimize the effects. And you have to admit, we are in that age of decline now. And the engine's about to blow. And God wants His people to be a people of action. He didn't save us to do nothing. He saved us to be His soldiers, His warriors. We sing the song, "Onward, Christian soldiers. Stand up for Jesus." Don't you hate it when you sing that song and you're sitting down? Well, we have to be a people of action. And we're never going to be who God wants us to be unless we recognize what the problem is, how deep the problem is, who that problem affects. We can't begin to be that people of God. Who can say you've been put in a palace for such a time as this? Mordecai sent back to Esther. Such a time as this will not happen if you don't really recognize it as such a time as this. We're in a time and a place where Christianity can explode. It can actually explode like nobody's business. But if we're not ready and we're not capitalizing on this for the kingdom of God, we are fools. There are going to be things that are happening in our days in the future that will make us shine brighter than any time in our life. And if we're not ready, we're going to miss that opportunity, and there will be people who won't go to heaven. And I'm not willing to sit back and say nothing. Next week, we're going to look into the narcissism. We're going to look deep into the narcissism and try to gauge where we're at within there and how to fight it. But it's so important you do not grow weary. This is part 9. Part 10 is next week. I was going to do State of the Union for part 10, but I got to spend more time on what we can do. So it may be part 14. I don't know. But we're going to cover it, okay? And if you're sick of it, then just tell me and I'll give you counseling, or I'll point you to Darren or something, okay? If you need to respond to the invitation for any reason, come forward while we stand in